Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
Beleaguered Camden served as a backdrop today for New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's call for judicial reform. I'm Dave Heller, and this is Newsworks Tonight. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, Christie presented progress in New Jersey as evidence that he could improve the criminal justice system nationwide.
The governor spoke to a crowd of more than 100 people inside a gym at the Roberto Clemente Community Center in North Camden. Christie directed his message toward a national audience, saying drug courts like those in New Jersey could work across the country.
Good policy that begins with the states can be good policy that can be applied to the national level as well. It's the right thing to do.
The governor also called for reforms to the bail system, like giving judges more discretion to hold violent offenders, but also finding ways to give nonviolent offenders who can't afford bail alternatives to stay out of prison.
There can be no greater reward for a society, no greater vindication for all our efforts than the moment that someone who strayed from the path of righteousness is able to return to that path of righteousness.
Christie's stance appeals to progressive voters in New Jersey and elsewhere, but also to conservatives who see the prison system as too costly and ineffective. So far, it hasn't done wonders for Christie's popularity. A new Monmouth University poll of Republican voters shows Christie near the back of a crowded GOP field with just 2% saying they'd vote for him. At another event today, Christie was met by protesters like Gary Frazier, who says changes such as the county-run police force were pushed on residents.
These are some serious issues for us. You know, they want to paint this across the nation that Camden's going along with this plan, but Camden is not going along with this plan. Camden's not had a chance to sit down at the table for this plan. They pushed this plan on us.
Hillary Clinton, the Democratic frontrunner, has also made criminal justice reform and drug addiction leading issues in her campaign. For WHYY News, I'm Joe Hernandez.
The papal visit to Philadelphia will take all of one weekend in late September, but a new fund now gaining momentum aims to create a lasting legacy of the event. Details from WHYY's Tom McDonald.
Sister Mary Scullion, co-founder of Project Home and chair of Hunger and Homelessness Committee of the World Meeting of Families, says the Francis Fund has a goal of raising $1.4 million to help area charities in the name of Pope Francis.
There's 50 organizations in Camden, in the Philadelphia region, that are addressing the needs of those in need. None of the money will come to Project Home, but we will use every penny of that money to send out to these 50 organizations to increase their capacity.
Sister Mary even started working today to raise money in Washington, D.C., where the Pope will also visit. She says the money will go to people in the region.
Like build an addition in Camden for health care services, to work with Dawn's House to purchase and renovate another house for women who have been trafficked, to buy healthy foods, to buy a truck for Housing First.
Donations are being accepted at www.mercyandjustice.org. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
And speaking of helping the homeless, you may have caught this during a recent Channel 6 Action News broadcast.
We need to go. We need to go.
That's Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter, captured on cell phone video obtained by Action News, helping a member of his security detail subdue a homeless man who approached the mayor shouting and cursing. Apparently, the man was complaining about having to be removed from the area around the Ben Franklin Parkway where he sleeps during the papal visit. Will O'Brien, a project manager at Project Home and a member of the Committee on Homelessness as part of the World Meeting of Families, says the homeless, like everyone else, will only be removed from the parkway during a security sweep sometime prior to the Pope's visit.
Outreach teams will be available to assist police if they're dealing with folks who are homeless on the street, particularly people with mental health issues or any other kind of resistance, so that the clearance can happen in a smooth way, a dignified way. And we're also assured that people who happen to be homeless or on the streets will not get any message that they have to stay out, that they would be just as welcome as anyone else to come back through the security gates.
O'Brien adds that Project Home has requested special upfront seating for some homeless men and women during the Festival of Families, September 26th. Pennsylvania will be an important battleground for control of the U.S. Senate next year when Republican Pat Toomey asks voters to give him a second term. Former Congressman Joe Sestak lost narrowly to Toomey last time, and he's running hard again. But leaders of the state Democratic Party have been looking for someone besides Sestak to carry the party's banner. WHYY's Dave Davies offers this look at why the former admiral seems to get no love within his own party.
So join me. Walk with me.
When Joe Sestak kicked off his campaign for the U.S. Senate in March with a 400-mile walk across the state's leading Democrats were nowhere to be seen. What do they have against him? Well, you can start with this moment from 2010.
But I am pleased to run in the primary on the Democratic ticket, and I'm ready, willing, and anxious to take on all comers in a general election.
You might remember that long-serving Republican Senator Arlen Specter switched parties with the support of prominent Democrats, including President Obama. The one Democrat who wasn't on board with this plan to keep the seat in the Democratic column was Sestak. He entered the race, beat Specter in the primary, and then lost to Toomey in the general, giving the Republicans the Senate seat and the congressional seat that Sestak abandoned. One who remembers the episode is Philadelphia Democratic Chairman Congressman Bob Brady.
The problem I have is that he says to me, you know, look, I'm looking, thinking about doing this Senate thing, but I will certainly talk to you about it. I'll let you know. 2 days later, he's out there announcing that he's running. Not that I really care, but don't tell me you're going to do something and not do it.
2 years later, Sestak turned off party leaders with another move, this one preserved in an awkward YouTube video.
So Nate came in, and I placed him overall in charge of outreach. In fact, the vast majority of
That was Sestak standing in what appears to be a kitchen, endorsing Nate Kleinman, a former campaign staffer who was running as a representative of the Occupy movement against incumbent Democratic Congresswoman Allison Schwartz. When Sestak made that endorsement, Kleinman was a write-in candidate. Democratic leaders were angry, but Franklin and Marshall College political scientist Terry Madonna says it's clear Joe Sestak just doesn't care.
He's a maverick. He's been distant and aloof from party leaders. He hasn't made connections. He's not built a relationship. There's no doubt that that estrangement has made party leaders look for other candidates.
Party honchos wanted Montgomery County Commissioner Josh Shapiro, a rising star, to jump into the Senate campaign. He declined. Now they're working on Katie McGinty, who ran for governor last year and is currently Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf's chief of staff. She attended a meeting last weekend of the National Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee to talk about the race. Sestak was invited, but didn't show. What does Sestak say about all this? Not much. He declined an interview for this story, and when asked after his March campaign announcement about his relationships with party leaders, he pretty much dismissed the question.
Well, look, again, it's not about party. It's not about type. It's about the people, and that's what's most important.
Some party leaders say privately that while he's not their favorite guy, Sestak's independent streak does appeal to voters, and he is a tireless campaigner. It's not clear they could beat Sestak in a primary, even if they were to recruit McGinty or some other candidate. So it's looking more and more like they'll have to bury those old grudges and learn to love the maverick. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign has returned a contribution from a Pennsylvania mayor after the FBI questioned him and searched city offices. The Allentown Morning Call reports that Hillary for America returned the $1,000 contribution to Allentown Mayor Ed Pawlowski's committee on July 8th. New Jersey's unemployment rate fell last month to its lowest level since October 2008 at just over 6%. New Bureau of Labor statistics out today, though, show that despite the lower rate, New Jersey's economy lost 7,400 jobs last month. 81 degrees, partly cloudy skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:15. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Mostly clear skies overnight, low in the mid-60s for tomorrow. Plenty of sunshine. Friday's high around 86 degrees. Still ahead, one local neighborhood and school battles constant lockdowns.
They were coming towards us. So instead of them going into the baby, I was like, I could get her for the baby. So like, I took him to his mom, and she said, thank you. And I said, anytime. And then I went home. I didn't come out for the rest of the day because I was scared.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Do you know someone with mild to moderate Alzheimer's? A clinical drug is being conducted to evaluate the safety and effectiveness of a study drug for the treatment of symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. Qualified participants must be 55 to 85 years old and have a support person to attend study visits. Qualified participants receive study-related medical care, memory testing, and routine lab work. Details at 215-884-1700, 215-884-1700. The Clinical Trial Center supports WHYY.
Next time on The Pulse...
You see the prongs here? Mm-hmm. You're going to kind of bite onto them. You don't have to chomp hard.
A breast cancer patient is getting ready for radiation.
Okay. Now I'm going to put on the nose clip.
One of the challenges is to not damage healthy tissue and cause heart damage.
So our patients are going to live a long time.
Some cancer centers are trying a simple approach that could help.
There's the red light. That means breathe.
Tomorrow morning at 9 on WHYY.
Tomorrow on Morning Edition, American companies want to know if the nuclear deal means Iran is open for business. The head of Iran's International Chamber of Commerce can't wait for investment.
Factories, they're working with the old-fashioned machineries. New investments have been very scarce, and many potentials are not discovered.
I'm Renee Montaigne, doing business with Iran tomorrow on Morning Edition.
Get more interesting weekday mornings on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. For many Philadelphia students, profound violence and trauma underlie the rhythms of daily life, making it all the more difficult to focus on school. WHYY's Kevin McCrory takes us to one of the most violent neighborhoods in the city, where students and faculty took to the streets this year in a protest for peace and got results.
14-year-old Griselle Pellant knows too well the sound of gunfire. Growing up on a narrow stretch of row homes in North Philly's Fairhill section, she's learned to anticipate the worst.
I do get that in my head, like just us walking and the shootout happen and one of us get hurt or one of the little kids get hurt. Like, I've been through them places before. I had to save a baby.
Pellet tells a story of seeing a gun battle breaking out on one end of the block and then seeing a young girl with a baby boy panicking on the other end. The teenager ran back to grab the baby and return him safely to his mother.
Like, I took him to his mom, and she said, thank you. And I said, anytime. And then I went home. I didn't come out for the rest of the day because I was scared.
Dealing with this danger on the streets was one thing. Dealing with it during school hours was another. But early during the school year, nearby gunshots spurred an unprecedented number of lockdowns for Pellet and her classmates at Julia de Burgos Elementary.
Anytime there's a shooting and police are involved, just so that no one runs in, no one runs out, we have to lock the school down and make sure that everyone who's in stays in.
Maritza Hernandez just finished her first year as principal at de Burgos.
We heard that they came from drug sales or just rifts in the community with community members.
When a school goes on lockdown, students are shepherded away from windows. They hide under desks or take cover in corners. Lockdowns can last anywhere from 10 minutes to upwards of an hour. At de Burgos, a kindergarten through 8th grade school, there were 5 lockdowns in the first 6 weeks of classes.
So, you know, we have an hour of missed instruction here, 10 minutes there. It kind of, you know, puts a damper on what we're trying to do, trying to, you know, focus on the academic portion. And then the kids kind of become very anxious. Some of them have, you know, they were crying in the classroom. The teacher's trying to calm them down.
Pellet, an 8th grader, says she tried her best to keep her cool through each ordeal.
We don't know if the guy was coming in here or anything, so we had to lock all the schools down, and we had to really lock the doors and turn off the lights and hide for we won't get killed.
Assistant Principal Julio Nunez says he was rattled most when shots were heard during de Burgos' after-school program.
All we hear is the bang, 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 bang.
And I remember seeing the students playing outside basketball on this schoolyard, and they just started running.
The cops arrived quickly, and none of the children were hurt physically, but Nunez can't shake the sight.
I think it reminded me of sort of where the students come from when they reach our school, and sort of all those traumas that sometimes go undiagnosed.
After that incident, Hernandez and Nunez decided that the school needed to push back against the violence. They organized a massive peace march in October. About 1,000 students, parents, and teachers rallied through the neighborhood with the support of the police, the school district, and local business owners. The school leaders gave me a tour of the route, which included the row of shops on 5th Street, north of Lehigh.
And all of these businesses were able to see that, you know, a whole bunch of people just screaming this chant of no, you know, no more violence, we want peace. And, you know, some of them joined right then and there.
After the march, weeks and weeks ticked by without a lockdown. But Principal Hernandez feared the guns would return.
When the weather started to break and it became warmer, you know, I thought to myself, this will be the true test.
At least during school hours, the streets remained silent for the rest of the year. Faculty and students count this as a major success.
We kind of gave the students a voice, and the students, that is one thing that they actually remember about the entire year, is we had that peace march, and it was because of the lockdowns, and we no longer have lockdowns.
After the school year ended, I reconnected with Griselle Pellet. She and her grandmother, both from Puerto Rico, sat in an open-air shack on an empty lot across from their house. The family passes hot summer days there, selling drinks to passersby and listening to the Latino radio station. For Pellet, who will begin high school in the fall, while she's confident in herself, she's anything but hopeful for the city. It's a view reinforced by the territorial drug battles that still surround her and the daily warnings she receives from her grandmother.
Yo digo que hay que estar escondido porque no se puede salir para la calle.
She said we should hide because it's everywhere is bad. So.
In the last 6 months, in the square mile around Pellet's house, police records show 6 homicides, 13 rapes, and 84 robberies. Pellet recently attended the funeral for a 2-year-old boy killed in a hit and run.
She don't want me to be outside all the time. I hardly come out. She's just scared. She's scared to lose one of her grandkids or one of her kids and stuff.
Pellet dreams that one day she'll leave North Philadelphia and become an obstetrician. Until then, as she sets her sights on med school, the sound of gunfire is never far off.
People still dying. People dying for no reason. Some people are innocent, some people are not.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCrory.
Acclaimed Philadelphia chef Eli Culp was one of scores injured in May's deadly Amtrak train derailment. Now, as WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, the region's culinary and business communities are rallying their support.
High Street and Fork on Market Street are usually bustling restaurants, but they were closed today.
We're grilling corn for a large vegetable centerpiece for the event.
Chuck Formoso and other staff are preparing a sold-out fundraiser this evening for the restaurant's co-owner, Eli Culp.
Cuba Libre is making a roast pig.
Ellen Yen is Culp's business partner and says more than 20 area restaurants are donating to the feast. She and others are raising money for medical expenses that might not be covered by Culp's insurance.
He and I are both just completely in awe of the support of the community.
Culp suffered a severe spinal cord injury in the Amtrak 188 derailment in May that claimed 8 lives and injured more than 200.
We're all in shock that this accident occurred, and we all can't believe that somebody so close to us was impacted.
He's been in the hospital ever since.
It's a serious injury that takes a lot of time to recuperate from, and you know, his spirits are positive, but he obviously has a long road ahead.
In 2014, Culp was selected as one of Food and Wine magazine's best new chefs. Yen says 1 year ago this day, Mayor Michael Nutter declared it Eli Culp Day in honor of his contributions to the city's culinary scene. Culp is among more than 24 passengers who are suing Amtrak for monetary damages. Tonight's event is sold out, but the silent auction's open to the public. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
One of the South Jersey Shore's professional theaters is dark this summer, leaving just 2, both in Cape May. WHYY theater blogger Howard Shapiro checked in on their summer productions.
Just last summer, this is what Long Beach Island audiences were hearing in Beach Haven.
And always look on the bright side.
One singular sensation.
If I were a rich man. Yeah,
Those renditions are from cast albums of three Tony-winning musicals, Spamalot, A Chorus Line, and Fiddler on the Roof. And Surflight Theater last summer mounted its own productions of each of them, an ambitious summer season for any theater. And it would be its last. Beset by financial woes, Surflight closed its doors this year after 65 years of performances. It had been the little theater that could, rising from bankruptcy after buying its building, then hit by Hurricane Sandy and under 4 feet of water. It came back from that, too, but with a $600,000 bill it couldn't pay, Surflight's board made the decision this past winter to close. And now, both remaining professional seaside theaters are in Cape May, a few minutes' walk from one another. Cape May Stage and East Lynn Theater each has a loyal following, both from locals and vacationing Philadelphians, and both are busy this summer. Cape May Stage, in a converted church behind the resort's pedestrian mall, is presenting the comedy Mary Mary through July 24th. And for the rest of the summer, the funny one-woman show called The Search for Intelligent Signs of Life in the Universe. Originally, it was a stage vehicle for Lily Tomlin, and here, actress Tricia Alexandro will take it on. East Lynn Theater Company is the other Cape May operation, and it produces inside a church on Hughes Street. Its mission is to revive or adapt old American works, and the company is currently commemorating the 150th anniversary of Abe Lincoln's assassination with a one-man play called Mr. Lincoln, a show that ran 35 years ago on Broadway. It's a tour de force for actor Tom Brin, who plays the president. On July 29th, East Lynn begins its world premiere stage adaptation of Huckleberry Finn. At least in Cape May, the tradition of theater at the beach continues these summer nights. I'm Howard Shapiro for WHYY.
One singular sensation, every little step she takes. One.
And that brings the curtain down on tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
She walks into a room and you know she's uncommonly rare, very unique, peripatetic, poetic, and chic. She walks into a room and you know from her.
The Mann Center supports WHYY. The Philadelphia Orchestra performs The Fellowship of the Ring live with the film on a giant screen on Thursday, July 23rd. On Friday, July 24th, Diana Krall returns to The Mann with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And Saturday, July 25th, the orchestra performs an all-Beethoven concert featuring the Leonora Overture No. 3, Piano Concerto No. 2, and Symphony No. 5. Tickets at mancenter.org.